Hvis jeg kunne få velge meg ett spørsmål som jeg kunne få et fyldig og sikkert svar på om undervisning I KRLE, så hadde det vært: Hva skjer hvis vi strukturerer all undervisningen om religioner og livssyn gjennom utforskertilnærmingen? Eller our researchers, researchers, som det heter på engelsk. Stemmer inntrykket jeg har om at vi da hadde kommet nærmere å nå målene for faget enn det jeg opplever at elevene gjør I dag? Jeg vet ikke, men det spørsmålet jobber jeg med å prøve å finne svar på. I denne sesongen av serien Oddrun snakker med, vi I England, og Oddrun har malt et bilde for oss av et komplekst og mangfoldig landskap av religion I engelsk skole og akademikere som har ulike svar på hvordan vi skal håndtere det. Sånn jeg ser det, har utforskertilnærmingen tatt dette mangfoldet I teorier om religionsundervisning og presentert det som et flerstemmig sett med instrumenter som elevene kan ta I bruk på en tilgjengelig og interessant måte. Hvis vi kan få det til å fungere I Norge, tror jeg det kan gi mye til KRLE-faget. Jonathan Downey var der når utforskertilnærmingen ble til. Og han var der når han først kom til Norge. Han rett og slett vår utforskermisjonær. Og I samtalen med Oddrun viser han oss enda litt mer av hvordan de tenkte når de laget tilnærmingen. Hva han ser på som utforskernes største styrker, og noen tanker om hva de kanskje kunne ha gjort annerledes. Du hører på KRLE-podden. I dag snakker Oddrun med Jonathan Downey om utforskerne.
Det skal handle om skole, jo. Religion og kristendom.
Jeg mener at ingen skal tvinges til å gå på skolegudstjeneste.
Lærerstudentene har kunnskap om disse evnene.
Faget vil inneholde hele 50% kristendom og bare 50% vranglære.
Kompetansemålene I faget.
Det K-en gjør nå, at den bare markerer at kristendommen har en særlig historie hos oss. Og det jo sant.
Den K-en kom til for 3,5 år siden. Den var ikke der før.
Det handler først og fremst ikke om K-en.
RLE-faget har jo en litt brokete historie.
Abonnerer de selv på KRLE-podden som lærer?
Ja, det en selvfølgelig ting.
Hei, Oddrun. Velkommen tilbake I studio.
Hei, Inge. Jo, takk.
Du, I forrige episode av Oddrun snakker med-serien så hørte vi om utsagnsarkeologi, som altså en forskningsmetode utviklet av Jonathan Downey. Men vi fikk jo høre at det blir to episoder med Jonathan. Hva handler denne episoden om?
Ja, vi kjenner Jonathan gjennom et annet prosjekt, som ikke nytt for KRLE-poddens lyttere. Det finnes allerede 4 episoder av KRLE-podden om utforskermetodikken, men nå har jeg laget en ny.
Spennende. Hvorfor det?
Jo, jeg har jo vært på besøk på Universitetet I Exeter, og det jo der utforskermetodikken utviklet. På engelsk heter det our researchers, og det altså en tilnærming til hvordan man kan gjøre religions- og livssynsundervisning, der man har tatt utgangspunkt I 4 ulike teoretisk baserte tilnærminger til religionsundervisning som allerede fantes I en engelsk bok. Og 4 av de tilnærmingene har man da gjort om til 4 karakterer. Og grunnen til det at I stedet for at disse ulike tilnærmingene skal stå som konkurrerende tilnærminger, så ønsker de å si at ja, men hvorfor ikke vise fram at når det gjelder å finne kunnskap om religion, så diskuterer man ulike tilnærminger. Så det de 4 karakterene, og det Have a Go Hugo, See the Story Susie, Ask It All Eva, and Debate It All Derek. På norsk så blir det, har det blitt Prøve selv Petter, Se sammenhengen Sara, Tør å spørre Trine, og Drøfte alt Didrik. Så I utforskermetodikken så blir elevene invitert inn I jungelen som vi som jobber med religion som fagfolk I, og blir dermed sammen med oss som fagfolk, eller lærere som fagfolk, I å utforske religion med ulike metoder.
Veldig bra. Og så I tillegg så skjønner jeg at det hører med til historien her at Jonathan var den som brakte utforskermetodikken til Norge. Gjør det ikke det?
Jo, det stemmer jo. Det var jo da han kom på besøk til Trondheim for å få råd om eget avhandlingsarbeid, at han la igjen de to første eksemplarene, jeg vet ikke om dette er fortsatt de to eneste fysiske eksemplarene som finnes I Norge. Jeg har gitt bort en til en av lærerne som jeg har jobbet med, og Camilla tror jeg fortsatt har sin. Men den finnes også på nettet nå, og den finnes også oversatt på norsk. Så det har jeg også skrevet litt om da, hvordan det her kom til Norge, I den kommentaren som jeg har til de fire første episoderne. Og faktisk det sånn at jeg og Jonathan husker det her litt forskjellig, og jeg og Camilla husker det også litt forskjellig, så det...
Det gøy utkommelse. Men du nevnte at Jonathan, han jo rett og slett en ekte Norgesvenn blitt, med Quick Lunch og artige norske gloser, og han leser jo norsk bedre enn han vil innrømme. Og han har vært I Trondheim flere ganger. Fortell litt mer om det.
Absolutt. Senere så har han jo vært her I forbindelse med såkalt Indie-prosjektet, det står for innovasjon for dybdelæring og der har vi jobbet med denne her metodikken og jobbet med det både praktisk og teoretisk da, prøvd å tatt liksom den kvaliteten fra måten de har utviklet metodikken på og der har jo du også vært involvert Inge
Absolutt. Jeg jobber jo selv med utforskertilnærmingen både med studentene I grunnskolelærerutdanningen og med min gode kollega Linda Onaheim og hennes elever, der vi prøver det ut I praksis. Og sånn det jo mange som holder på nå, prøver ut utforskermetodikken. Så her det rom for flere episoder av KRLE-podden etter hvert, og vi har jo laget en temaside på krlepodden.com, der man kan klikke på undervisning, og så finner man en egen side om utforskerne. Men nå synes jeg at vi skal høre hva Jonathan kan fortelle om utviklingen, hvordan dette her ble til.
Ja, enig. Det gjør vi.
I am Jonathan Doney. I'm a senior lecturer in education at the School of Education at the University of Exeter, which is in the middle of the little bit of England that sticks out into the Atlantic Ocean. Looks a bit like a leg kicking a football. I've been working with Rob Freese, Giles Freese, and a couple of other colleagues on the researchers' approach to teaching religious education. We're going to talk a little bit more about that and about how it first came to Norway. But my main responsibility in that project is thinking about some of the theoretical frameworks and foundations that the whole approach is built on. One of the things we wanted to stress all the way through is we've come up with this kind of framework, the idea that you can look at religious education topics through multiple different lenses, disciplinary lenses or methodological lenses. And we have developed four characters, but we would never want anyone to think that it has to be only those four.
Yeah.
And so I think some of the ones that have been suggested, particularly in those Norwegian discussions, have been really interesting. I think another thing that's interesting for me about the characters is once you translated or got translated the materials into Norwegian, the four characters have different names. So tell me what they're called in Norwegian.
Yeah, tør å spørre Trine, diskutere alt Didrik, prøve selv Petter, og se sammenhengen Sara.
So I think those are obviously those names work really well in Norwegian, but whenever you talk to us across that linguistic divide, you always use the English names.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. Rather than the names that you're using with your students, with their students, in the materials that you've got in Norwegian.
Yeah.
And then you translate them back to the four.
Well, the translation is fairly recent, and it's actually the two teachers that I cooperated with who did the translations. And then when Camilla did the translation on the book, she used those names. I think when we discuss them, we switch back and forth between the names. But also what I want to say about the names is when the teachers developed the Norwegian names, they were in contact with someone here.
Right.
And we got an understanding of how those names were formed from rhymes with the first letter and then indicating the method in the name and in like have a go or debated. Also, the method is indicated even in the name. Yeah. And that was then became very important for how the Norwegian names were chosen. Right. So and still there are some differences. For instance, see the story Susie has become Se sammenhengen Sara. So important thing there is the story is actually out of the name. Right. And it's emphasized how she looks for connections between things. So definitely, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I've been thinking about those four characters, or what more characters can we develop, because I have not yet seen another successful character developed. And when we have tried to work the angle, we have come across how complex your thinking is when you develop those characters. That's one thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, and particularly with students, so far my conclusion is I think four is more than enough. And I've seen also with students that sometimes they say, well, we can only manage two.
Yeah.
And they choose two of the four, or maybe sometimes even one. But so what's your comment on that? You know,
well, I think part of the reason for having lots of them was to really highlight the point that we should use different tools or lenses, sometimes around the same question. So, you know, if there's one topic that we're looking at, maybe we need to look at that topic through Asking All Ava's eyes, but also through See the Story Susan, Debate All Derek, Have a Go Hugo, because the theoretical underpinning, sort of the idea of the multiplicity, multiple perspectives, you kind of lose some of that if you only use one character. And particularly if you are using the same character regardless of what the topic is that you're researching or thinking about. And I think one of the problems that we were trying to speak to in coming up with this pedagogy was the idea that there is one way to do RE. There is one lens through which to look, and then you just look at everything, regardless of what it is, through that same lens.
Yeah.
And that doesn't provide the richness, the complexity. To use Batkin's term, the sort of the heteroglossy of many different tongues, you lose that with a single perspective.
Yeah.
So that's why I say there are not just four, there could be any number. And it may be that for particular topics, teachers, students invent, come up with a character that suits that particular thing, in the same way that a researcher will put together a methodology for the particular set of questions that they're looking at.
Yeah.
If they were asking different questions, they would use different approaches.
Yeah. Now, working with teachers, I also see how, well, there's the way I regard it's a bit of it's a bit seductive, this approach, because of the sort of glossy front with the four characters, very appealing. But then, in practical terms, it takes some time before the ideas sink in. And I also think that kind of theoretical knowledge or the field of religion is quite rare in practical among teachers or even with teacher students, which we teach ourselves. It's difficult to get to. Often I've given it myself in tasks, and what I see then is they read the theory, you can hope, before their practice training. But then when they're writing their assignments, then they read the theory and then they get it. And then they sort of discover what I could have done. But also there are always all kinds of practical issues, like we did not have time to introduce more than two characters and so forth.
There's a lot of questions in there. And I think, I mean, one thing that I think on reflection is that this is a different way of doing things that is so different from the way that we are used to learning about civics or maths or geography or history, that we do need to include time to understand what it is we're doing. You know, any other subject in school, right from the beginning of a child's journey through school, they're learning not just about the topic itself, but they're learning how learning works. They're learning how teaching works.
Mm.
They're learning the expectations. You know, when the teacher says 3 + 3, they need to do that calculation and then feed the answer back. But I think this approach to religious education is quite different, certainly in England, quite different from what a lot of children will be used to doing, and different to what a lot of teachers are used to doing.
Yeah.
So I think that time to introduce the approach, to think about why we're doing it, how we're doing it, all those things, is very important. And I think the other thing that is important is the value of understanding the teacher and the student together as co-researchers. One of the things that's quite clear in England is that a lot of RE is taught by non-specialists, sometimes taught by people who are not qualified teachers. They're classroom assistants. And so one of the values of the researchers is that the teacher, the teaching assistant, the person leading the learning in that classroom doesn't need to be an expert in six world religions. In fact, they don't need to be an expert at all, because they can work together with the children in their class to together find answers to questions. And I think that breaks down one of the bigger problems in education, whereby the teacher is seen as the, you know, to use Vygotsky's phrase, the more knowledgeable other, and that the students are there to have their minds filled with knowledge that the teacher holds. But with the researchers, actually what we're saying is, let's go together on a journey of exploration to find out why Sikhs do this.
Yeah.
What do Christians think about Easter? So there's no requirement for someone in that classroom to have the correct answer.
Right.
And I think that's quite different from how a lot of pedagogy works.
And that fits so well with the new curriculum in Norway now. There is so much emphasis on exploring. I don't know. No, there is also an issue. There are several issues with how to get to the point for this to be understood.
Yeah.
I think, and like you say, it's a significant shift. One of the first experiences with the teachers when they try to use it with students in school is that they could hardly make the students make questions.
Yeah.
They were not used to making the questions. They were used to answering the questions. So that has to be rehearsed.
Yes. Yeah. And that kind of the existing structure of you're here to answer the teacher's questions has to be broken down to some extent. And then, like you say, you have to rehearse that. You have to negotiate the sort of the rules and the expectations around how to have those discussions together in a class. I think the positioning of the class leader, I'll use that term, the teacher, the teaching assistant, the positioning of them as a co-journeyer with you is also breaking down some barriers and some established power dynamics. You know, well, the teacher is the expert.
Yeah. Well,
not necessarily.
Yeah. And I think that also takes some time.
Yeah.
And I think it took some time with the teachers that we were working with. And getting back to how we do this in education, I think actually it might be better to work with working teachers than, of course, we can teach it in teacher education. I will keep doing that, I think. But you have to maybe work with or maybe to get the working teachers to work for the ideas to seep in.
And so tell me then. I know you're interviewing me, but I'm going to ask you. Piotr and Gunvor have taken up this approach, and they are very well established teachers.
Yeah.
So what reflections do they have that are different from the new trainee teachers in terms of the challenges and
First of all, they're already teachers, so they don't have to worry about being learning to be teachers.
Yeah.
And they have other methodologies in board, so they have more strings to play on. And then I think they could take their time to sort of take it one step at a time, try something out, and they developed several schemes for teaching, which I hope to publish around, or for them to publish around in due course. It's just, I think this is the way to go to work with maybe teachers, and maybe more teachers, and maybe to get teachers together to exchange also experience. We also, of course, have some teachers at Lunde School, who's been involved. So at the moment, we are a little bit of standstill with the school side of things. But I think the way forward is to tell the story of what we've done.
Yeah.
To keep on publishing on the teacher's level also. And to make available more examples of what have been done. So I think that is on our plate too.
I think about that. That's one of the biggest potential ways forward, because we've been producing the initial stuff. We've got these four characters, as I say, they're not the only four.
Yeah.
We've got a few schemes of work around those four characters. But the more that the approach is taken up and people perhaps are willing to share the resources they put together, willing to share some of their characters, willing to share some of the schemes of work and things like that, the broader the approach becomes and the easier it is for new people to pick up some of the ideas. They can see. So first of all, you've got the resources you can use. You can go straight in with See the Story, Susan, in this topic. Mm. But it also helps people become creative and imaginative around, well, actually, I've got a topic on this particular thing. There's no character that speaks to that, but I could put something together and I could draw on a character that someone else has created or an approach that someone else has shared to grow the set of resources that are available.
I think particularly maybe one of the teachers at Lunde did something of the sort and he developed some new characters or
something.
And also on the more theoretical side, Knut Aukland has written one article where he lifts out this learning how. This is in the Norwegian, this article, I think, for the moment. And he builds on the ideas of learning into, about, and from religion. And then he says, but what about learning how?
Yeah.
And then he points out that even though the new Norwegian curriculum encourages exploration, it doesn't really address the point that for doing that, you need methods.
Yeah, you need to know how to do that. Yeah.
So that is really also something where I think on a theoretical side and which could be generalized also from this to teacher education now is to really focus on the how.
The how.
Anyway, I also like to know what more has happened with the R researchers since. Obviously, I know more about what happened in the Norwegian scene, but what has happened with it in England? What kind of feedbacks have you gotten? And what has happened with it even more internationally?
So I think it's fair to say that the place in which it has had most impact is in Norway. Because it's not just in Trondheim, but it is, you know, through our networks with you and your networks in Norway, I think there's quite a range of places. You know, I'm thinking of people like Linda and also in Stavanger.
Geir and Marianne.
We're not entirely sure. We know that there are a few teachers in England who have engaged with the material. There's one teacher in particular who's made a series of YouTube videos of the different characters. And occasionally we will get contact from someone saying, oh, I'm using the researchers, it's brilliant. But it certainly hasn't been taken up widely in its current form. I think that that is a result of how religious education is a very complicated topic and subject area in England. And it, you know, it's further complicated. I think there are lots of approaches to teaching, to behaviour management, to assessment, and things like that that are quite popular in England, and they are often a complete system that is sold to a school. So someone will come along and say, "I've got some resources. I'll do some training. We'll help you put systems in place that will support you with X, Y, or Z. We'll charge you money to do that." And I wonder, this is a personal view, the fact that we've created this resource and circulated it free of charge, there are some places in the world where that is perfectly usual and normal. I think Norway is perhaps one of them. It was a free resource. People will use it. There is almost a suspicion of stuff that is free in England, I think, and particularly around religious education, because historically, lots of religious groups have provided resources free. So I've got files on myself here from various different Christian and other religious organisations who send material to schools and say, here, this is free, use it. But it's quite often not very independent.
Yeah.
So I think there is a bit of a suspicion around a free resource in religious education that makes some people go, not for us, maybe. Which is a shame, because this is, you know, this is in a sense an attempt to develop independence and to save schools money.
But it might not apply. It might not be in keeping with their worldview, which is framed by economic thinking.
Elsewhere, I think it's being.
Well, that's interesting, though. You know, from a Norwegian point of view, it's interesting that maybe what we are doing with it is developing it more, and maybe we could sort of see what we can do with back and forth. To maybe engage some more schools, teachers here, and on that level, see what can be done.
I think that would be interesting. I mean, I think that I'm interested in the development of the new Norwegian curriculum, because this whole idea of exploration, sort of open-endedness and deep learning and all those things, they are almost antithetical to the direction of English religious, well, English education policy, whereby we have tighter constraints, more control over the curriculum from the centre, more sort of emphasis on facts and rote learning, and independent exploration. It's kind of, well, we don't really want to encourage people to do that. We want them to know the important information, and that is this and this and this.
No, I have two different associations for that, which is when I was here, around 2004, I went into English schools, observing some teaching as well. And I thought that was very structured, what I saw. Very like, very structured, you know, coming into a class, well prepared. It might have been the lessons that I saw, but I just think very, very clear what the aims were going in, carrying it out, and then the students doing their tasks, and this were, I think they were 10th graders or something, and they were, what's the exam there? There's an exam which...
Yeah, the GCSE.
Which makes it very not free, and I was told that maybe further down the grades that would be freer. But that was a difference, because when I went into Norwegian schools in the same project, it was... I came in with the teacher. The students were mingling. Nothing happened when we came in. In England, of course, the uniforms. In Norway, no uniforms. And in Norway, students, some students staying behind working in the break.
Yeah.
And the classroom stayed open.
Yeah.
So from just that observation, of course, I think there are different cultures.
Very different cultures. I mean, having been in some of the Norwegian schools now through our collaborations.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of, well, the things I noticed, the informality.
Yeah.
So, you know, no uniform, but also in a lot of UK schools, English schools, staff are expected to wear particular types of clothes. You know, when I used to teach, I was expected to wear a suit. Right. And my female colleagues were expected to wear dresses or skirt suits or, you know, yeah. Very... but I think one of the things I see quite differently, the students I meet in Norwegian schools are interested and they're engaged and they're motivated,
yeah.
Whereas maybe it's an artifact of all the regimentation in English schools. As soon as it's break, they want to be out of the classroom.
Yeah.
They want to be out of school. But I think it's in your sort of reflections on being here in the early 2000s. In my policy work, there's a big shift in 2010, whereby the national curriculum becomes more prescriptive, where the content is more centrally decided, where there's a lot more emphasis on behaviour policies. And even today, our Prime Minister has announced that mobile phones will be banned in schools.
Yeah.
So there's central government concern about what happens in school during the school day. Whereas my sense in Norway is that there is central government concern over education, but how the school day runs, what happens within the school is more for the school and the school boards and governors and teachers to think about.
Yeah, should be careful not to generalize too much. Oh. But one other issue along that line is, of course, one major difference between England and Norway is the inspectorate.
Yes, well, I used
time explaining this for my Norwegian colleagues, and then I used time explaining why we didn't have it for the English colleagues.
Yes.
But it's true. This also in Norway we have the one school for all. It's supposed to be similar, but there is no inspection.
No,
there are some kinds of inspection, but nothing like you have in England. So in reality, it would be quite big difference between two different schools. But we have the same curriculum.
Yeah,
we don't check.
We could have a whole discussion about.
Yeah, but we're not. Because the other point that I wanted to get to because another point that nowadays I think are being picked up from the English scene. Is the work that has been done with big ideas.
Yeah.
Because the way I see it, I think I understand the work with the big ideas as being very much linked to similar kind of ideas which the new reform is based on. And then from the new curriculum from 2020 with the... core elements So now we get this from the overall educational scene to the core elements, and we understand that this is linked to big ideas in natural sciences. But then we see that there's been work done in England on big ideas. So now I think, and there is a website as well.
There's a website, there's a lot of resources. I haven't been really very involved in that at all.
Yeah.
It kind of connects to the researchers' kind of approach. And, you know, some of the work around the big ideas, Rob Freethy was involved in that with Barbara Winterskill and others. But I think, in a sense, it speaks to the same question that the researcher speaks to, which is that religious education in England is an oddity. It's an odd subject because of where it fits legally, because of how people perceive it, because of how it's been historically. And there are attempts to try and sort of shake off the old reputation and construct it as an appropriate topic, appropriate subject area for everyone to study at school. in the same way that everyone studies geography, everyone studies history, everyone studies language, everyone studies math, science, and things like that. You know, and I think the big ideas is part of that ongoing project, almost to restore religious education to a proper academic, non-proselytizing, you know, not attempting to convert people to a particular worldview, but thinking about different worldviews, thinking about how they shape the world we live in, ethical frameworks, behaviors, and things like that. So I think that work is important.
Yeah, and this is the same in Norway. 20 years with KRLE or now, and we still discuss this.
Yeah.
Is it a normal subject? How can it become? Is it fitting in school? Is it threatened?
Yeah.
I don't think at the moment it is threatened in Norway, but it could go if it doesn't make sense anymore. Then
yeah.
I think we are, after all those years, we are still circling around some of those same questions, actually. So that's interesting. But what I was interesting to ask also then, with the big ideas and that kind of development, how does that fit with the picture that you just drew sort of the general developments of the school?
Well, I think things like the big ideas, things like the researchers, they challenge the existing narrative, particularly the narrative around central government control over what education is for, what education includes, which topics are taught, at what age. You know, the introduction of our national curriculum in 1992-ish was very, very prescriptive. Teachers were given big binders and it told them, you know, which week, which day, which topic, how to start it, how to teach it, how to... Very, very prescriptive. Which kind of leads to a deprofessionalization of teachers. They become deliverers of a prescribed curriculum rather than responsive to what's going on. And again, the researchers' approach is one of the ways in which that narrative is challenged. Teachers are not just spouting a body of authoritative knowledge. They're searching together with their students to find the answers to the questions.
Yeah, there's good ideas and big ideas, but it's the question is how to work it with regards to educating students and to make people use it in schools and to work with it. What more has happened with it abroad? Because there are other abroads than Norway, which
That's true. I've heard that's true. Norway is always the first choice of places to go abroad for me. I think probably partly through the collaborations that we've formed and the discussions that we've had at some of the Scandinavian and Nordic focused conferences, I think it has got some take up in Sweden, Denmark, Finland. I'm less sure about Iceland. I don't know. Partly because my main contact in Iceland retired a few years ago.
Our only contact in Iceland retired. Because he's been alone for years and now he retired. And I know no one knew. So
I think there is interest. And I think, you know, the way that RE teaching works... People talk to each other, and they talk to each other across national divides. And so, I would imagine there'll be it will develop. The more people use it, the more word will spread. The more people who talk to each other will hear about it. But my understanding is that there is interest in Germany as well. I think that's very interesting because the German structure of RE is quite different from Norway in terms of the sort of the different settlements for the different landers and things like
that. Yeah, it's very complicated. From what you're saying, I think, and from what I'm hearing, maybe you don't know so much about how it's used.
No, I mean, that's one of the things. It's a bit like I don't know, sort of creating some kind of wonderful monster.
Yeah.
And once you've released it into the world, you have control of it. And because it's freely available, people can share it. You know, if they've got the PDF, they can send it to all their friends.
Yeah.
And we, I mean, not that we want to keep control of it, but it's very different from a book that's published and the publisher sells copies and the publisher then tells you, well, we sold 50 copies to this country and 20 copies. We have no idea. We ask people for in the back of the book, there is an opportunity to give feedback, an online form. We ask people to do that. But a lot of people, I think, are using bits of it. There are probably people who look at it and think, I might use it one day. And then there'll be other people who are using it really quite significantly, and we have no idea.
So you get very little feedback then?
We get very little feedback.
Yeah.
As I say, occasionally we'll have an email from someone saying, well, use it. I mean, for one ridiculous example of how the feedback works, my son is an audio technical engineer. He goes to schools and installs audio-visual systems, speakers, projectors and stuff like that. And he was at a school in Birmingham talking to someone who was helping him find the right room and introduced himself. And the teacher said, oh, are you related to Jonathan Doney?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yes. He goes, oh, tell your dad that we use the researchers in this school. It's brilliant. So that's the kind of level of feedback we get sometimes.
Yeah. Because we now put this, it's in the Norwegian translation.
Yeah.
So you might, Norwegian teachers could get in touch.
Yeah.
Don't be shy.
No, absolutely. In Norwegian or English.
In Norwegian or English. And we also put now, inspired by you, we put, you know, the opportunity to get in contact with some of us who have been working with our researchers.
And excellent.
Underneath this episode, probably we'll put some links to relevant addresses and stuff.
And one of the benefits of doing that, certainly from the form we have, is there's an opportunity to leave an email address.
Huh.
And that means when we come up with new material, or we're running events, we can send you details.
No. Which would also be very good in a Norwegian scene,
absolutely.
That if we could collect the emails from people who would not object to being contacted regarding this, then we can start collecting information about who is using it and how it's been used and maybe bring people together at this point.
For my earlier PhD, I did a bit of comparative work on the policy of religious education, or KRI, in Norway and England. So I know enough Norwegian to be able to ask for a cup of coffee or a train ticket. And that was considered a good qualification to be involved in spreading the word of the researchers across the seas to Norway.
So there was a conspiracy before you left.
Well, it wasn't in Norway where it first got discussed. I don't know if you remember. We were both at the ISREF meeting in York with Camilla.
Yeah.
And I think we were talking to each other about what work we'd been doing and what had been happening in our professional lives. And I told you a little bit about the researcher's approach, which at that point was fairly early in the development. Giles as a teacher and Rob as a sort of academic at the university had been working together, thinking about some of the big problems in RE in England. And Giles was talking about some of the puppets that he used and getting the children in his classes to kind of imagine themselves in different roles as different kinds of researcher. And these characters that form the researchers kind of began to form out of that. You know, are they asking lots of questions? Are they discussing, debating? Are they involving themselves and having a go like Hugo? Or are they looking at sort of broader narratives and things like, see the story Susan? So we've been working on some of this stuff. Giles and Rob particularly were thinking about the characters, what they represented, how they would be used, how they could be used in the classroom. And then part of my involvement was sort of sense-checking some of that, thinking about, you know, from my own background as an RE teacher, thinking about where that would work in primary school, which is 5 to 11-year-olds in England, or secondary school, 11 upwards. but also thinking about some of the theoretical underpinnings. You know, what was it that we were doing in creating these characters, asking children to inhabit them in some way? What are the theoretical bases for that beyond when it seems to work?
Mm.
And so some of the papers, some of the academic papers we've written, particularly around sort of the bricolage approach, I was very heavily involved in a lot of that. But yeah, we were talking about all of that when we were in York. And I think amongst other things, I said, oh, I'll send you some stuff.
Yeah.
And then a while later, I think there was an email back saying, oh, tell us more about this. We want to... I think you started off wanting to use it with your initial teacher education group.
It's funny, Jonathan, because I remember it a bit differently.
Well, how do you remember it?
I remember you pulling me aside at Israel, telling me about this new approach.
Well.
And it was a little bit of a hush thing, and you didn't want me to spread the word yet. But I don't remember whether that maybe the articles was, you sent me the articles later.
Yeah.
Because I did receive some of the early articles, which dates back to, I think, 2013 even?
Yeah.
The first ones. Right. Yeah. And then I don't think much happened until you came to Trondheim to visit us.
Yeah. So I'm remembering that differently.
Okay.
So my first trip to Trondheim was to talk about my PhD research.
Yeah, but that's when you left the booklet.
But maybe Rob said, if you're going to Trondheim, fill your suitcase with some books and just leave them behind and see what happens. Because I remember Rob and I came a little while after that to watch the presentations that your trainee teachers were doing, where they had taken the researchers' approach, tried it in their schools, reported on how it worked.
Yeah.
And I remember it was November because the sun came up shortly before it went down again around lunchtime.
Yeah.
and we sat through some really interesting presentations and thought, well, we would never have imagined the research as being used like that or like this or for this topic.
Yeah.
And then I think we had a workshop with them in the afternoon, didn't we? And they came up with some really good alternative characters.
Yes, I do remember this event, but I remember the running up to that event, you left the two booklets when you were there. I think this was might have been 2016.
Yeah.
And then I put mine on my desktop and Camilla put her on her desktop and mine got buried under the pile.
Yeah.
And she picked it up and started using it with her students. And before I knew it, she had invited you back, and that was her students.
Yeah.
And then I just came on, just like you, just came to see when you were there. And I also remember we had a workshop where also colleagues participated. Yeah. And that's the first time I think I was involved in trying to develop new characters even. Then we heard at least part of the story. I heard that the two of us remember it.
But doesn't that just exemplify that if you look at the same topic through different lenses, you see different things?
Yeah. And how important it is to exchange, really. And no one knows what the real story is. Maybe we should ask Camilla how she remembers it. And then the last point, I think this is, and that is some critical perspectives. Do you have any critical perspectives on this?
Yes. Not many. And they're mostly positive, critical. I mean, we've kind of touched on some of these things already. So I think we could have been more careful in providing the initial stuff to help people introduce this as a new way of doing things. So in the book, that you know, we talk a little bit about the different characters, we talk a little bit about the inquiry cycle, and then we're kind of going into topics and how you do stuff. And I think we've got, you know, some good lesson plans on different religious questions. We could maybe have included more sample lessons or example materials and activities to introduce the different characters. So I think that's one thing that if we were to do it again, or if we were to, you know, do an updated version, I think that would be one thing to think about.
Mm.
I think another thing to think about is how we articulate that you can create your own characters.
Mm.
So again, perhaps alongside that, we might have introduced some activities along the lines of design your own character. You know, what is it that you're trying to do? What are the methodological issues you're trying to wrestle with? What would the embodiment of that approach look like?
Mm.
What kind of things would that character do, ask? How would they behave? Because, as I say, we were always working from the basis that people would create their own characters to suit their own needs. But I don't think we've quite given enough scaffolding to support people in doing that.
And also there's a bit of a stretch between that being possible. For that to be possible, you have to have a really well-qualified teacher. Could it be done by the unqualified teacher?
Yeah, because it doesn't require the specialist religious knowledge.
Really?
Because Ask It All Ava doesn't have a religious knowledge. She has a methodological knowledge, which is only what
that is. See, that is lacking even more. The methodological knowledge means you have to know what kind of methods exist for exploring.
Yes, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
But some of those teachers, I mean, a lot of teachers in England who are teaching RE are trained teachers. They're specialists, but not in religious education. So they might have methodological knowledge, but not religious education methodological knowledge. Although I would argue methodological knowledge can be applied to any topic.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because we haven't touched upon the fact that in the Norwegian scene, we have also social science teacher involved in the team, Gunvor.
Yeah,
and the way that they have been using it, I think, is sort of moved in the direction of this being method.
Yeah.
So that is totally okay then.
I think so.
So then, you sort of. It's not important anymore that it's religious education could be applied to anything you think.
I think so. I mean, when we first started putting it together, Giles was using it in some other humanities subjects, in history. In fact, I think one of the lessons that we went to down in Cornwall on one of your visits was a history lesson. It was Henry VIII.
Is that history or RE?
Yes, that's a question, a philosophical question. But I think the approach that underpins all of this is applicable to social sciences. I mean, you could take a similar approach to analysing texts in English, for example. You know, if you took a Shakespeare play and used the different characters to investigate it, to understand what was going on. So the pedagogy is not a religious education pedagogy. In that narrow sense, it's a broad pedagogy because of our backgrounds. So Rob and I, Karen and Jeff, are all religious education trained. Giles is a religious education teacher, practitioner. Once we kind of developed the pedagogy approach, religious education seemed to be a good place to try it, to test it, to see if it worked. But as you said, with Gunvor in Norway and some of the stuff we've done early on, it applies the approach, principles of the approach can apply to almost any subject and almost any phase, primary, secondary, you know, elementary, high school. You could take this kind of approach to university level.
Absolutely, which Eivind is doing.
Yeah. So the pedagogy is not a religious education pedagogy.
Yeah.
In that
sense. Yeah, and also it is, of course, inquiry-based, which is also a broader type. It's a type of methodology, and then it's applied.
Yeah.
You've used that applied to religion. Good. It seems to me that there are potential to move on in different directions, both with regard to more interdisciplinary and looking at, you know, possibilities with that. looking at the international scene,
yeah.
You know, maybe you organize some gather together some information.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I hope, that through this podcast, our listeners would have had the opportunity to learn more.
I hope so.
About our researchers.
Good.
And yeah. And don't be shy to get in contact with either one of us, and information will be provided in connection with the podcast on also a website that I put together in Norway, which is now available in English and Norwegian.
Good.
So, and then there are also other resources. Good.
Good.
Should we say that that is good then for this part? Thank you.
Du har hørt en episode av KRLE-podden. Hvis du vil høre flere episoder om utforskerne, kan du følge linken I episodebeskrivelsen til KRLE-podden sin nettside. Der finner du fire andre podcast-episoder. I den første episoden får vi høre fra de to lærerne I Trondheim som du nettopp har hørt Oddrun og Jonathan referere til, Bjarte Mongstad og Gunvor Wendel. Den andre med Rob Freethy, den mest akademiske delen av brødreparet Freethy som har vært sentrale I å utvikle tilnærmingen. I den tredje episoden det den praktiske broderen Giles Freethy som kommer til ordet. Og I den fjerde episoden møtes alle disse stemmene og flere til som Geir Scheie, Oddrun Bråten og Knut Aukland I en workshop om religion og fotball som Bjarte og Gunvor arrangerte. God lytting! Serien Oddrun snakker med laget av Oddrun Bråten I samarbeid med meg, Inge Andersland. Gå inn på www.krlepodden.com for å finne flere episoder. Musikken av Lee Rosevere. Takk for at du hørte på.